Thank you, and feel free to ask Joe questions or raise concerns with him. As a manager, he's just been doing a tremendous job learning about the school, and he's somebody who comes to campus and goes down to Sharples and has lunch with the kids and follows up with emails. So if you have a complaint, indeed, talk to him. It's great to be here. I've been looking forward to this. Denver's one of my very favorite places. I grew up in Kansas, in Salina. So every time we had a family vacation, we came to Denver and we stayed in the Bugs Bunny Motel, which is still here, and you can find it on Colorado Boulevard. You know where it is? It's really quite a place. And my sister's here and my son lived here. So Fred, my husband, and I always love to come to Denver. So for me, this is saving the best for last, of course, because this is our last alumni tour event of the year. And I'm delighted to be here and look forward to the conversation. I want to give you a few updates on campus. Then I want to kind of share a little bit about my reflections as I've gone around listening on campus and with our alumni. But most of all, I want to open this up because I want to hear your thoughts, your experiences, your concerns, your worries. This is a great collection of alums, 1940 to, what, a year or two ago. We have a wonderful collection of alums and some parents and friends and siblings. What's happening on campus? When we came back in January from winter break, the earthquake in Haiti had just occurred. The students came back on a Sunday, and by Monday, the students were already organized. We had a collection at 4 o'clock on Monday in which they were beginning to announce various efforts to raise funds and to work in Haiti. As you know, Swarthmore students care deeply about the world. They're very organized and they respond quickly. The campus is incredibly alive with activities and events. We have had in the last 2 weeks the National Fencing Championship, only to be followed by the National Debate Championship. It's wonderful to see the students, and of course, this is the time of year where the honors students in theater, or every honors student produces some kind of performance. So you just can't keep up with it all. With these great students, of course, go the faculty. And I would love to spend all evening telling you about how incredibly impressed I am with the Swarthmore faculty for their deep love of these students, their concerns to challenge and support each and every student. But let me just give you a couple of examples. Peter Judson, who some of you must know, probably some of you even studied under Peter, class of 78, Swarthmore grad, in 1 month, got a Guggenheim, an NEH, was elected to the American Academy of Berlin, and the Austrian government gave him their highest civilian award for a book he had written on Austria. Just a normal month in the life of a normal Swarthmore faculty member. Charles Kellerman, who started our computer science department, has just been named a distinguished educator by the Computer Science Association. And one of my favorite faculty members this year is a fellow named Hans Ludemann, who none of you probably have had because he's a visiting Cornell faculty member from Germany. He's a specialist in jazz. He's a specialist in German jazz. Who knew there was German jazz? German jazz, American jazz, but he is also helping to bring around the world African jazz. So we have had this incredible feast this year in jazz, German, African, American. Again, sweeping in the students, embracing the community, helping everyone see the world around them in the broadest and deepest way possible. It's been an absolutely busy year. As you know, we have just named a new dean of students. She is coming to us, Liz Brown, from Mount Holyoke. We're very, very excited. She's been at Mount Holyoke, She's been at Bowdoin College, she's been at Boston College, and she will hit the ground running on July 1. Her husband, Randy, who's a graphic artist, comes with her, as does her son, Dexter, who's 4, and Fred and I talked with young Dexter, and we think he's probably ready to enter Swarthmore next year. So, because he was reading nearly as well as we were. So we're very excited about Liz. We've had a great year in athletics this year. I know some of you in the room are former athletes. We're very happy that our soccer team went to the Sweet 16. Our women's soccer won the ECAC championship. For the first time in our history, our baseball team will be going to the Centennial League championship. Our students are more and more engaged at kind of coming out and enjoying athletics as well as arts and debate and all of the engagement. But what I want to now focus on, and I'm happy to answer questions about other activities, is really the topic of the evening is about what you care about Swarthmore, your experiences, your values, what you worry about in the future. In traveling around, and Stephen Baer and I traveled nearly 40,000 miles this year to listen to alumni and parents, what we've been trying to do is to begin to initiate a conversation that will lead to a shared vision. Because it's my hope we really can have a shared vision out of our past experiences and in light of where we're headed that will help us plan strategically for the future, that will help us make decisions about what faculty lines we need and what programs we need to support and how to do our budget. It's very important, I think, for the college, for the whole community of the college, to cast forward our vision out of our combined and collaborative sense of values. So I'm going to open it up soon to your questions, your comments, and your suggestions, but don't think tonight is the only time. I hope you go back to your homes and apartments, and as good Swarthmoreans, think about it all evening long, and send me emails or make postings to the website. The question was, has the controversy around football subsided? And my answer is, I think it's still in the process of subsiding. We are seeing many alumni who were very concerned and very upset about that decision re-engage. And I think what I hear from those alumni is the deep love for the college. So we can talk about it more later. I think, you know, colleges, communities are somewhat like families. And sometimes there are rifts in families, but rarely does everyone completely disconnect. And at some point, you heal and move forward. And I think we're in that process now. So let me say just a few comments about how I understand Swarthmore. Since about the mid-80s, I've kept a file on my favorite essays in the liberal arts. I've gotten them here and there from magazines and various things. Some are by great authors, some are just things I've clipped out of the newspapers. You must do the same thing about a topic that you care deeply about. In 2001, I found an essay entitled The Meaning of Swarthmore. Some of you know this essay. In this essay, kind of dancing across the pages in bold, are a series of phrases, a tradition of excellence, a community of learners, unlimited potential, the excitement of the pursuit of ideas, obligation and responsibility, making the world a better place. This essay so summed up all that I believe about what liberal arts should be that I put it at the center of my file, and there it has sat since 2001. And though it came to me to be an essay that I kept going back to and reading, I had no idea that someday I'd be joining you and talking about how we live out these values. and how we steward this incredible tradition and how we plan for the future. Now, every day on campus, I see the students and the faculty and the staff live out these values. In the coursework, in the studios, in things like the honors program, in the extracurricular activities. And as I've gone around the country this year, I've seen it, how Swarthmore alumni live out these values in amazing ways, in all sorts of different professions and vocations and volunteer work. And I could probably spend all evening talking to you about the amazing alumni I've met, but I thought I'd just mention one because he was one of the first alumni I read something about in September, Judd Rakoff, class of 64. Now, Judd Rakoff, as you may know, is the judge that recently agreed to a $150 million settlement between the SEC and the Bank of America. But he came to my attention because in September, he denied a $33 million settlement between the SEC and the Bank of America. What struck me was not that he said yes or no. What struck me was the kind of Swarthmorean style he used. Because he quoted Oscar Wilde and said it was a cynical arrangement. Oscar Wilde, he said, defined a cynic as someone who knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. And I think that's that Swarthmorean style of depth knowledge, knowing the text, but also applying it with a moral edge. The students live out these values on the campus. You know, Swarthmore doesn't have a mission statement. I find this kind of charming. We have a statement of objectives. And if you read the statement of objectives, what it says is that Swarthmore is about making students the agents of their own learning. And I've never read another college that says that. In fact, it didn't dawn on me until I read Swarthmore's mission, statement of objectives, that every other college talks about doing something to the student. We're going to make you a leader, we're going to do this. But Swarthmore is there to support the student to be agents of their own learning. And I am discovering this year that our students are quite good at being agents of their own learning. And they combine this kind of incredible vigor with a real joy of learning the ideas. And they do it inside the classroom and outside the classroom. And they have a lot of fun. Pterodactyl hunts, over 100 organizations. The primal scream, I got to go down at like a quarter till midnight and flip pancakes and listen to the students do the primal scream. They're engaged fully. And I mean, that those of you who are alumni and parents know these incredible students. And I could tell you about so many students. I just went to a Lang Opportunity Scholar event where six students talked about their projects. One was a student who started a civic literacy project in Chester. She became concerned in her tutoring students in Chester that whereas lots of attention was paid to math and reading and writing, no one was teaching them about voting or civic responsibility. So it took her 2 years to get the school district to agree to let her to start a voluntary project. And they didn't want her to do it because they thought no one would show up. But finally they all agreed, okay, she might have 30 students. So she started the project and 247 students showed up. Now this project, as she graduates, has 400 students a year and it's become a model project for cities around the country. Another student, Lois Park, who's graduating, used her Lang Opportunity Scholar grant to go to Sierra Leone and start a malnutrition project that was a community-based education. Now, how a young woman who's never traveled abroad conceives of a project and goes to Sierra Leone is amazing to me. But all she could talk about in her presentation was how much she learned from the mothers and the children Now, there's one story I'll tell you, and I don't have to say much because I just want you to go home tonight or tomorrow and go on the web and listen to this young man, Travis Polin. Travis Polin, class of 12, is a physics major. He just established the national record in the 50-meter freestyle swim event in the Paralympics. He is half a point away from qualifying for the International Paralympics. Travis has one leg. He's very comfortable talking about this. It is a very, very powerful video. And for me, it just captures this kind of irrepressibility of our students. The faculty engage, support, and challenge. That's what I've learned about Swarthmore that feels a bit different for me. The faculty don't just teach the information. They teach you and you and you, and they think consciously about how each student needs to be challenged or encouraged or provided for or what the faculty member can do to help that student learn. Right now, I think the biggest kind of cutting-edge development on the campus is research. And as I've gone around and talked to every department this year, I've heard the faculty think about how to help the students learn research skills by engaging with the students in a one-to-one relationship on research. It's easy in the sciences, and I know many of you are in the sciences, to support students in the laboratories over the summer or during the year. I went to a Sigma Chi poster session and I saw students who had worked with faculty to develop annotation of music software, to work with faculty to discover and explore the bleaching of coral, to work with faculty to look at cell-to-cell HIV transmission. It's amazing what these students do, but they do it because the faculty invite them into their labs, their projects, their research programs. Over the summer, last summer, I really wanted to learn about these values. And so I went back and I read about all of the presidents. We have some pretty amazing presidents and some amazing stories of the difficult times, of the ideas, of how they worked with faculty and alumni to keep Swarthmore moving forward. I also read a lot about our founders. And I'm a scholar of progressive movements of religion. And so I knew quite a bit about the Hicksite Quakers, a tremendous group. They really helped lead the way in progressive education in this country as well as in social justice. And I think these founders, people like Lucretia Mott, who's long been a heroine of mine, and Elias Hicks, had these values about equality, about commitment, about community, about justice, about simplicity and simple living, about speaking the truth to power, about collaborative decision making, about the peaceful settlement of disputes. And I see those values very much alive on our campus. And I think they're rare in America today. And I think they're one of our most precious treasures, that and this incredible intellectual rigor. So now I think next year, we, under the guidance of the Board of Managers, will start a strategic planning effort. We've got to look forward. We're going to have to stand back from the mirror and say, what do our students need over the course of the next 10 years? What issues are they facing? We have to think about things like sustainability. We have to think about how knowledge is changing with technology, with globalization, but with knowledge itself. I think we have to worry about things like civil discourse and common good. We have to bring our values and our traditions and our practices and cast them forward in a kind of evolving tradition of Swarthmore to make sure that we continue to produce graduates that have this incredible ability to think creatively and critically, who have an ability to produce in the arts and the sciences and the social sciences and engineering, but who also care for the world and who care about, as did the Hicksite Quakers, making this world a better place. So let me stop there and open it up. And I'd love to hear experiences, values, questions, anything you want to share. Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that, in the last revision of the honors program, the seminars were opened up to students who are not honor students, but are especially the who are majoring. And I think that really has helped to kind of ameliorate the differences so that students have opportunities to take the seminars even if they aren't honor students, and I think that has helped tremendously. In some departments, we're starting to hear that the honors program may need to borrow from the core programs. I'll give you an example. In the history department, I was in there several weeks ago, and the faculty were engaged in a fascinating conversation around research, as I just mentioned. So their concern is that to get into great graduate programs right now, you have to show that you've done independent research. And the students majoring in history have to do an independent research project, but the students doing honors in history don't. So the faculty are trying to figure out how do you keep the rigor and quality of the honors program, but really blend in now an independent research program. So I do think there are some tensions. We have some faculty who question that the honors program tends to appeal to certain students and not the whole body. So I think it's a lively debate, but I also sense that there's a great deal of going back and forth. And for most of the faculty, and certainly almost all the alumni, that honors program is a source of real distinctiveness. One of the things that has impressed me as I've gone around the country this year is how much the honors program helps us with our reputation, because we have faculty members from all sorts of schools come as honors examiners, and they learn about Swarthmore. And then they can go out and kind of be our ambassadors. So I think it's a very important program. Yes? I really appreciate that, and I do think that's an issue we've got to continue looking at. I know that the admissions department several years ago redid its admissions brochure. Sam is sitting behind you, was in the video, as a way to try to address that. And I do, I think there is that reputation. I don't see it myself, but I will say that I think this is an era in which many colleges have an incredibly conformative culture. And I saw it at Colgate, and I saw it at Yale, and I saw it at Emory. And I do think there is something about Swarthmore that supports community and individuality. And I think it's actually a Hicksite Quaker tradition. Sometimes I have a dilemma of how do you help interpret to a world that you can have community at the college level. 18 to 22-year-olds can have community without having to have groupthink and conformity. And I think that is kind of a challenge. But I agree. I have heard, too, from some friends about, oh, geez, you were at Colgate, it was so much fun, and now you're at Swarthmore. I think Colgate's a wonderful school. I think that was like the Colgate ghost thing. Colgate was a marvelous school, and it was fun. But the students at Swarthmore had a lot of fun. So, yes, let me try to answer that, and I'm not sure that I thoroughly understand the question, so come back. So I define the community as all who belong to the community, who have a connection to the community. So faculty, staff, students, alumni, parents, and friends who get engaged, although most of the people who belong are the alumni and the parents and the faculty and the staff and the students. It is easier of course, for us to talk with faculty, staff, and students because they're there, and the Alumni Council and the Board of Managers because they come. And I think one of the things we need to try to do more of in the future is reach out to our alumni and our parents. And, you know, I appreciate this gathering tremendously and the ones we've had this year, and I will continue with them. And I think we want in the future to try to send out more faculty. We were meeting with some of the young alums tonight, and we were talking about faculty. I also hope we can use technology as a way to get more ideas and more conversation. There is, you know, so much wonderful technology that I'm hoping we can use that and begin to develop that as we go through strategic planning. It is hard, and I think, you know, I've seen it in every school I've been at. The further you live away, the harder it is to stay. If you're in Philadelphia and you can run out and see a concert or something, it's one thing. But when you're in Denver, it's a long way. So we've got to make some effort. Yes? Corey Baker asking a question about financial aid and how we're able to maintain a need blind and loan-free policy. And Joe, you can add comments to this because Joe's been very much a part of this process. When I arrived at Swarthmore, we felt because of the loss of our endowment, we lost about 16.8% of our endowment. That was relatively better than many other schools, but it still looked bad. We projected at that point, last July 1, that we were going to have to reduce our budget by $15 million. As we looked at things more closely, the board set it at $8 million, and that was a more realistic worry at that point. We thought the economy might continue to fall, and it didn't, thankfully. So we had to reduce our budget by $8 million. Can you imagine? What a nice thing for a new president. Hi, I'm Rebecca Chopp. Can I have some money out of your budget? Yeah, Chopp, you know, of course, of all things. But that was a fear that had no grounding in reality. The community on campus did a phenomenal job. And very quickly, in the fall, the consensus became there were two things we were going to protect. One was need blind aid. We wanted to protect our students and the access of families. And the second was jobs. We didn't want to lay off people. And I have to tell you, I think I went home with near tears in my eyes to my husband one day after a faculty meeting, because I'd never seen this happen. A faculty member stood up and said, we will take pay cuts before we see people laid off. So those were the two goals: redo our budgets without cutting aid and without laying off jobs. And as your question suggests, this is not what was going on in the rest of American higher education. So it was tough. We asked Stephen and Don and people in the back to raise more money. So when you get calls on our annual fund, you'll know why that is. But we re-engineered some of our facilities maintenance. We've done very well with our campus in recent years. And beyond that, we just looked at everything. I mean, I felt like we scrubbed every little budget sub-line item. And it was kind of a good experience as a new president because I found out how many, you know, paper clips the dean was ordering. We looked at everything. And you know, we were able to, some of it was just efficiencies and effectiveness. Some of it was tackling some tough issues that we hadn't wanted to tackle. But other than that, it was redesigning. The faculty decided to cover some of their leave replacements, and they agreed, if the economy does not come back, to reduce the size of the faculty by three lines. But the board and the administration wanted to wait for several years, because that's a really drastic thing to reduce faculty, but we would reduce it by attrition. So as for now, we're in very good shape. But I think I should say we continue to worry about our financial sustainability. 47% of our senior class were on financial aid. 55% of our first year class are on financial aid. If that increase were to continue, you know, what would we do? I'm hoping that that really was a reflection of the recession and that we will stabilize. But we will, this will be the first aspect of the strategic planning effort, I think, will be to look at financial sustainability. And I think aid and size, because we like being small, are important values for us to hold on to. But it's going to be a tough road. Joe, do you want to add anything to that? Yes. Okay, well, we don't think that many students will actually declare engineering. So that's good. We really have a phenomenal engineering program. It is not an overly large program. Kate's parents sitting in the back. Kate is an engineering major, so that there you go. You can ask about what it's like for a new student in engineering. You know, if anything, I think we want to try to attract students to engineering and help engineering not only succeed in its own way, but make engineering a part, an even broader part of the liberal arts curriculum. One of the things that indicates to me that people are thinking about engineering is that, one, engineers can actually get jobs in this economy, which is really good. Lawyers and other professions are having more troubles. But also that knowledge itself is increasingly pairing up with engineering. Biology and engineering, psychology and engineering, a lot of the sciences are partnering with engineering. We see programs in the arts, theater and engineering are working together more and more. So, you know, I think we are a long way from worrying about so many students taking engineering that we're being overwhelmed. Our engineering program is fairly diverse right now in terms of both the students and the faculty. We certainly want that to continue. Yeah, that's what I think the hope would be. And it really is about the nature of knowledge. It's about, well, David Baltimore was telling me that the biggest thing at Caltech, he was the former president, Caltech is now on the faculty, is engineering and psychology, economics, and sociology, because they're doing all these MRIs and studying, you know, what the brain is doing. So I think it's that, I think it's bringing teams together to do collaborative efforts. But I don't think we're overly concerned. We're lucky we have an engineering program. I think it helps us keep our male-female balance, for one. It really does. Men like to go to schools that have engineering programs. That's what the studies show. You know, oddly enough, our engineering program is not by any means all male. But I think that's because we have women and minority faculty. Yes? I think the engineering program was founded in 1890s by the Quakers. The Quakers, being Hicksites, they didn't have ordained clergy, so they didn't have to worry about training the clergy. So they realized that they could make education practical and scientific, and they were big believers in kind of the practical scientific nature of education. And so they were one of the very first to put an engineering program in a liberal arts college. Yes? I think this is actually an important issue for us as we go through our planning. You know, we don't want to lose the kind of culture that we have. I've been in schools that are evenly divided, and, you know, we don't want to lose that. I think in a world of globalization, as a scholar of religion, I mean, I think people need to know how to take traditional viewpoints very seriously. You can't just dismiss them. We're going to be producing graduates who will be working on teams of people from all around the world. Some of them have very, very deeply held religious and cultural beliefs. It's not just respecting, it's also knowing how to navigate. So I really do think this is kind of an interesting and important issue for us, how to maintain our culture, because every culture has its politics and its values, but yet also how to critically prepare our student to live in a world, especially a world of globalization. So I keep thinking that, you know, one way is to bring more alumni back, because not all of our alumni represent a far left perspective. Another is to make sure we are supporting student groups. This actually is an issue on campus. The students themselves are talking a lot about intellectual diversity. The College Republicans right now have over like 25 members for the first time in years and years. There is a very strong Christian evangelical group on campus. So the students themselves are having this discussion, and I think it's important. But I'd love ideas on this, because I think we don't want to hurt our culture, but we also want to make sure people are prepared. Yes. And that's really good feedback. It's rendered in a perfect Swarthmorean way, too. But I also think it's very, that I know what you mean about, I've thought about it too, and actually it is quite a Quaker tradition, this drive of perfectionism. I mean, the Quakers have, so it may be very much deep in the soil. But I see some of our students suffering from that tremendously. Yeah. I don't really have an answer, but I've also begun to develop that concern. And in part it relates to truth in advertising and admissions. If we are saying that anyone can come here and go into this or that medicine or law, and then we don't have a way to support the students through that. When we get excellent students, but they differ in background and in background preparation. And I think that, especially for pre-med, is often the issue, not always, but often the issue, that they may not have the background necessary to take organic chemistry and the other kinds of things. And I think one of the things that faculty are struggling to do, to figure out, is how you provide the support services to help the students succeed. I do not know that. I really need to go back. What I've learned about this year is the assessment that we have in the departments themselves. And I think that's a fairly strong assessment program. But I don't know about the pre-advisor program. So I imagine you may be right. So that's a good task. Yes? I think one of, it wasn't just Al Bloom, it was certainly some of the presidents before him, but certainly one of the great things that Al Bloom did was to help diversify the campus. And today we're one of the most diverse undergraduate, small liberal arts undergraduate campuses. And I think it really is wonderful for all of our students. And one of the things I'm excited about, our new dean, Liz Brown, is finishing her PhD in kind of what's often called now the third wave of diversity, the first being kind of statistical, the second being multiculturalism, and the third being inclusive excellence. And I really look forward to her leadership continuing to build upon this more recent tradition. Yeah, I think that's a very good comment. I've thought that too, that we need to celebrate everyone in the community. Well, it's interesting, and I think we, you know, one of the things we'll do in the planning effort is to really try to drill down very carefully and see where our alumni are and what they have done and the kind of professions they have gone into and where professions are going in the future and, you know, try to adapt to that. It is very true that we have been very successful at providing leaders in higher education. It is really quite amazing to read through. When I came to Swarthmore, I asked Stephen for a list of all of our graduates in higher education. And I thought, oh, 12 pages, you know, whatever, it'll be a lot. 44 single space pages. The number of presidents, provosts, leaders in their fields, really amazing. That, and in part, that's related to that honors program, which is just a PhD training ground, if I've ever seen one. So we have that data, and now I'd love to see the data in law, medicine, business, social work, nursing, teaching, and other things. I think we need to really analyze and see what we do well, in a sense, where people take their careers, and where we need to go in the future. But please, feel free to send me other ideas and suggestions and questions, and I think we still have some food, and we still have somebody behind the bar, so please stay and have a very good time, and thank you for being the last of them.